It's the Press Box on ESPN 1100 and 100.9 FM.
Yeah, rolling along on a beautiful Friday afternoon. Clay Baker, Review Journal's Ed Graney here. It's the Press Box, ESPN Las Vegas. And joining us now is Dr. Caleb Pinneger with Crivetti Orthopedic Center here in Las Vegas. Go online, CrivettiOrtho.com. Dr. Caleb Pinneger is one of the foremost experts in sports injuries, and we've wanted to have somebody on of your stature for many, many years, Dr. Pinneger. Thank you for joining us.
I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Because for many, many years, we would go through these sports injuries. They happen on such a daily basis, and fortunes are radically reversed when big players and big athletes go out, and we wonder how long their timeline will be when they come back, but yet, how effective will they be when the timeline comes in? And we thank you for joining us, because now you can add that perspective for us.
Yeah, we usually just give out wrong information. Now we're here with the right information. We usually just guess on things when medically you and I, just looking at us, know that we have no business doing anything medically or giving any kind of diagnosis. So we appreciate you coming in.
Right.
We don't even trust Ed with the ibuprofen, so this is really good.
That can be dangerous. Yeah.
You just dropped an iPhone. Can you imagine operating on something?
I know. Can you imagine like a selfie stick almost went through your eye right there? Dr. Caleb Pinneger here with us, Crivetti Ortho. We were talking about sports injuries. Let's first hit on Tiger Woods. Now, Tiger, we did not expect him to be as good as he is right now. Second round, he was leading for a certain amount of time, but he's gone through so many back surgeries and even like a spinal fusion. Talk about like what he's had to go through just to even maintain this kind of success.
It's the amount of torque that a golfer puts on his low back is beyond what any of us can really predict, especially a professional golfer. This isn't a recreational guy coming out and taking swings, hitting 300-plus yards. He's smacking the ball so hard, and the torque demanded on his spine is huge. And so typically we're talking that these guys, after a recovery from an injury and having a microdisc surgery or a lumbar fusion, to be coming back within around the six-month time, he is maxing out the speed. He is coming back quick and surprisingly playing great.
Is it over? It's probably not overstated, especially with back injuries, because all you hear about when you go to gyms is core.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously you're talking about one of the most well-conditioned athletes maybe in history. I'm assuming his core was as strong as most people's, if not more than most people. And yet still, just time and time again with this back issue. I mean, it's almost like if it happened to him with that kind of core, the average guy, you know, Joe's like Clay and I, would be really bad. I mean, how important is the core out there? And yet, even if you are a world-class athlete like him, it seems like it can still affect you.
It can, and once that disc has torn, it has a higher propensity to tear.
Again. Okay.
And then once you've been in there a time or two, now you're dealing with scar tissue, and the ability of him to recover and come back to normal is more challenging. And at this point, now he's had the multiple disc surgeries and now a fusion. That's a lot bigger story now than just a simple microdiscectomy, which was the really small incision, take out the limited portion of the disc that was causing him pain and problems, and now he was dealing with a much more difficult recovery this time. But the core, absolutely, it's key to balance the strength so that you're protecting your spine, because any sort of twisting motion, the amount of pressure that puts on your disc while you're, for example, a golf swing,
right?
If you don't have those muscles tight and stabilized, then the pressure it puts on your back can really predispose you to really hurting yourself.
Dr. Caleb Pinneger here with the Crivetti Orthopedic Center. You can go online, CrivettiOrtho.com. And Dr. Pinneger spent a one-year fellowship recently with Dr. James Andrews, the father of sports medicine in Gulf Breeze, Florida. What was that like working at the Andrews Institute with all those professional players? And, of course, you got your normal every guy rec players as well.
And that's exactly what it was. Dr. Andrews has such a unique clinic. And he'll take care of the high school kid down the road that separated his shoulder, and he'll take care of the elite NFL quarterback and everybody in between. And the caliber of people we got to work with during that year and the wisdom of Dr. Andrews, it's unprecedented. And just his experience and ability to give these people not just what they need, but to understand the demand that they have specifically to their sport, to have that experience is invaluable.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been at least a serious injury in the past however many decades where he at some point wasn't linked to either the surgery or a consultation or looking at someone, what else someone did. Can you tell us a little bit more about him? I mean, is it the innovation in him? Was he just a person who kind of saw things other didn't in the orthopedic field? Because, again, he is the main guy you always hear about, where in other fields there'll be like 10 or 12 guys, but it seems like a professional sports, James Andrews' name has come up so often. Obviously, you've just thought about him afar, like, who is this guy? He's always the one these people want to see.
Yeah, and he got started early in the innovation side of sports medicine. Prior surgeries for these injuries were large open incisions,
right.
All the dissection to get to the small piece of tissue that you really needed to work on. And as he started to explore the arthroscope, which is a small incision, put the camera inside the joint. If you look at the literature backwards and see his name on all those pioneering ventures. Can we put a scope in the elbow? Can we put a scope in the ankle? And Dr. Andrews was on the forefront as he was exploring those options.
Let's talk about a quarterback people know, Aaron Rodgers. Collarbone surgery, 13 screws, 2 plates.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us have broken collarbones, never had screws. Again, back when you're a kid, it seems like back then they put the sling on you and they said, okay, 8 weeks or whatever, let's see this again, let's see if it healed. Now there's screws in place, and obviously he's a high-level athlete. They want to take care of his shoulder as quickly as possible. He actually was put on IR where he has to be out at least 2 more weeks, but they say he might practice tomorrow. Last week in Pittsburgh, we're hearing he's throwing balls 50 yards. Is this just that Aaron Rodgers is different from most people on Earth, or is this something that when you break a collarbone like this and you put that many screws in, it enhances the ability to heal quicker?
It does help. The stability with and without seeing his operative report,
right.
The report said that he had 13 screws, which is a good amount
a
of screws.
I don't even know if that's
a lot. if a lot of these surgeries, I mean, we're putting 6, 8,
okay,
maybe 10. If they must be quite confident in the stability of that repair, because it is pretty quick to get moving. In a non-throwing shoulder, those guys can be getting back after, you know, 6 so weeks, but
okay.
But the throwing shoulder, there's different demand again on the body part, and so they must be very confident with the stability they were able to get with that plate and screws, and yeah, he can start torquing on it quicker.
What's the propensity of that injury occurring again, or how long do you feel like they should sit out a little further if you're looking at a season that might be done? I mean, it seems like a pyrrhic victory. Like, what could be gained at this point if you go and re-injure?
If you re-injure it, that's a much bigger recovery the second time, and
okay.
It was his opposite shoulder last time. If he re-injures through this one, then it's a lot bigger deal. You're dealing with, I mean, from 13 to, obviously, you're going to be talking more screws, which was already a good chunk. And so I think they'll probably watch that pretty close. If there's not a lot of utility in him coming back and really pushing for a postseason run, then I think they'll be pretty smart. The Packers have historically been pretty conservative, and I think they'll take care of their star there.
Naive question, but these are the ones we need to ask, because I think there's a lot of people out there going through the same mind. You just said, let's say he would come back in a few weeks, and you know he takes another hit and it cracks again. Are the 13 screws always in there, or and they add more, or they will come out? At what point? What happens there? Because you hear 13 screws, you're like, okay, do those stay in there? If you don't know anymore, and I bet a lot of listeners wouldn't. I mean, because you just said there'd be even more screws this time.
Yeah, what happens is usually when you have the plate and screws are strong, the likelihood of him breaking the plate or the screws is not so good. But you either break above or below where you tried to fix, and now you have to remove what was put on and try to span it with something new. So you're talking about removing probably the majority of what had to be put in and replacing it with something even bigger.
Check us out on Facebook right now. We're going Facebook Live at ESPN Las Vegas. We're talking with Dr. Caleb Pinneker, CrevettiOrtho.com. He's an expert in sports injuries. He's here in the Valley. And we were going on through other, when you have right shoulder surgery on your throwing arm, as Andrew Luck has had, he had a January surgery, but when he came back in October, he realized that it was just too inflamed, or it was hurting. It was giving him pain. At what point do you start saying, all right, maybe it's time to shut it down? Or do you actually, because I think a lot of people felt in management that he was being too much of a coddled athlete and he wasn't going as hard as he needed to. Is that also part of like your rehab package where you're like, don't coddle, go as hard as you can, let's see how it works out? How does that work for the rehab?
To coddle a thrower's shoulder is different than a lineman's shoulder or a receiver's shoulder. When we talk about the demand placed on a specific position player, to push a thrower's shoulder after a labrum surgery is not as good of an idea as with some of the other players. Some of them can wear a specific brace and can get back pretty quick. But if we're talking about the demand of all that rotation and all that torque that a thrower specifically puts on it, and if you look at the baseball world, they take longer to come back than all the other position players, and historically longer to come back than some of these professional football players. So I'm not too surprised to hear that he was sore as he tried to come back, and that he may take a little extra time.
Whether it be Teddy Bridgewater, whether it be so many athletes now, I want to talk to you about this. I think 20 years ago, and a gentleman here with you today just said, you know, tore the ACL. 20 to 30 years ago, it seemed like when you tore the ACL, it was like, you know, they wrap it up and you don't move, whatever. I know young athletes, a really good friend of mine, her daughter's a softball player at Centennial, tore the ACL last year. Take us through, and I assume it's blood circulation, but nowadays you tear the ACL, do you have your patients walking that night? It seems like, you know, 20 years ago you're in bed for 6 months, and now it's like, man, you wake up from the anesthesia and they want you, they're already circulating. Take us through that. I assume it's the blood flow. What did they learn from 20 years ago to what you do now as to why you should be treating ACLs this way now as to when back before James Andrews and others they didn't?
And that's a great question, because we have seen such a difference in the trend. If you recall, even Jerry Rice coming back from his surgery, they were pushing him to 4 months.
Yep.
And we're seeing that even trend back. So it's gone through such a phase of you're talking a week in the hospital in an immobilizer, and now we put him in a brace and have him walk the same day.
And we're
actually seeing that the rehab's taken a little longer than we were seeing at the time of Jerry Rice. We push people back further because we want that to have time to heal. When we put an ACL in a person, it starts, if we take the patellar tendon, you're taking a tendon and trying to convince it to become a ligament, and you want that to undergo, it has to reestablish blood flow. The blood flow inside the knee joint is more poor than if you are talking about a lot of other areas of the body.
Okay.
The fluid inside the knee joint doesn't have as much nutrition as the other areas. So that ligament needs time to mature, needs time to stabilize. We're pretty aggressive about ambulation and range of motion because a stiff knee is also not good.
Yes.
And so we want them to have the range of motion, but we also want them to protect this ligament as it comes around, because it takes time before it actually learns and starts doing the job that we intended to do.
You have your patients that night walking.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. Incredible.
Well, it's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, on all athletes, right? This girl was sophomore in high school. She's maybe 15 mm-hmm. or 16, tore it, you know, put the foot in the grass. It went the wrong way and tore the ACL. And the mother was telling me that they waited for the swelling to go down. She might have had their surgery several weeks later, but an hour after the surgery, she had pictures on Facebook of her walking.
Yeah.
I don't know if it felt too good for the kid, but I mean, it was one of those situations where even the mom was shocked. They said, no, let's go. You're getting up.
Yep. Exactly right. We want to move them. We want them to keep the motion helps the stiffness to get out. The motion helps your range of motion to continue. And in truth, the motion can actually stimulate some of the healing factors in the joint, so that if there's a meniscal injury or a cartilage injury, we want some of the body to try to work on healing those areas, and the motion and the weight bearing helps that along.
I want to talk about the hip, because Isaiah Thomas, world-class athlete, NBA player, has this hip injury. We hear often as we get older throughout the years, I know people in my own family who have had hip replacements. I assume that's age, wear and tear, something different than maybe Isaiah Thomas would have. But the hip, to me, seems really unique in that it's one of these things that can really we remember the Bo Jackson era, of, you know, the world-conditioned athlete. It affected him. It ended perhaps one of the greatest two-way careers ever, even though he had one. Talk to us about the hip. Why is it? Why can it affect young and old? And why is it so difficult for people like Isaiah Thomas needs to recover from this? It seems like the hip is one of these injuries where it takes much longer to recover than from other injuries.
And that's a great point, because hip arthroscopy, putting a camera in the hip and treating a hip through a small incision and a scope and the little instruments we use to remove torn cartilage or fix a labrum, the surgery has come a long way, but the track record of it has not had the success of some of the other joints. It's the amount of weight that's borne through the hip. It's not a shoulder. It's not the shoulder, despite being so mobile, at least is typically not a weight-bearing joint. And now you have a joint that's really locked in. It's a ball and socket joint with a rim of tissue around the edge, the labrum. And if there's wear and tear in some of these athletes, what we do is we will take an x-ray and we'll find that the typical sphere of the ball and socket joint starts to deform. And it's a response to how much weight they're putting on it, the range of motion they demand out of it, and just how much wear and tear. It's surprising to have a camera in the joint of an NBA player.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, these guys are really worn out pretty quick. They demand a lot out of their joints. And with the hip specifically, it's hard. It's a little harder to recover from. And to try to get a guy back who's been in the league and been putting that amount of weight on it, the assumption is that, is this all labrum? Is it all just that soft tissue? Or is he going down that process of having a little bit of early arthritis?
Does his size matter? He's such a small guy. And then, like, take him and take LeBron, and in terms of, the like you say, the wear and tear on hips, would you see more danger to a guy his size, to a guy LeBron's size, or does that matter? Does it all, they're different bodies and they're going to respond differently?
I think there is difference between person to person. Some guys are huge and don't have huge bones. Other guys are small and have really large bones. But the weight, of course, is a factor, but some of the guys that are so big also are built bigger, and so that I think that joint can take a little more beating, and in a littler guy, he may still put enough weight on it to really overuse it in a pretty short segment.
That's Dr. Caleb Pinneger, sports injury expert and orthopedic surgeon at Crivetti Ortho, CrivettiOrtho.com. This is fascinating stuff. Finally, we get a chance to talk to somebody.
Every question you and I could never answer.
I know. We were like wondering, like, because I figured, like, the level of attrition for an NBA player, especially a point guard, I mean, this would be like a devastating injury, and yet we still see him seeming comfortable sitting on the bench watching the action go on. How long would you expect him to come back if the surgery was in June? So we're talking like 6 months. They think he can be back by February or January.
If the typical recovery after going in and working on an athlete's hip, you're talking a period of about 3 to 5 months. They wait for some recovery, and they come back in, and it takes a lot of rehab and a lot of work to build that joint back up to help it be strong. And
that long.
And we do get him back pretty quick.
So the NBA guy, who, again, we'll go back to what I said about Tiger and his core, the NBA guy who comes into you that well-conditioned with something like the hip, does that matter? I mean, or is it the average Joe off the street who has had a tough job or has used that and has the same injuries, not nearly in the shape, maybe runs a few miles every week compared to an NBA level? Is it simplistic to say, well, that guy's in such better shape, he's going to recover sooner? Or could a guy like Isaiah Thomas take as long as the average Joe, depending on his body and how he responds to things?
The advantage that Isaiah is going to have is the quantity of resources available to him with
the rehab
and the therapy. And in all truth, these guys, they tend to come back quick, and they are so strong to begin with that is in their favor.
Okay.
If a recreational guy injures his hip, has to have a scope, the recovery for the tissue to heal doesn't change, but the ability to get back to their pre-injury strength and their pre-injury status is a little easier for someone who's in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. This is really cool. Thank you for coming on and joining us.
It's going to be a great segment go forward, because I think a lot of people, much like Clay said, with the law side of things, that's always a fascinating subject. This is just as fascinating, because we hear about these injuries all the time and we read about them. And, you know, I mean, I think everyone knows what a torn ACL is, but I don't know if they know what goes into repairing the ACL and what kind of timeline and why timelines are different. Some people are back from ACLs much quicker than others. And then, like, I was shocked Aaron Rodgers, with 13 screws, was throwing balls last week, and now he's practicing tomorrow. I mean, he has to stay out 2 more weeks because IR tells him he has to. Mm-hmm. But I assume if he's practicing tomorrow, they would probably put him back on the field sooner than that, but they can't because of the rules. I just can't believe a guy with 13 screws in his shoulder is going to practice this quickly. Now, maybe it's just he's a freak and he's just different from us. I don't know. But to me, that was amazing. Were you surprised at that, or are you just saying, no, I've seen people like him?
It is surprising. I think the good thing is they want to get him moving the shoulder, getting his strength back so that he can be throwing the ball on the level he was.
Right.
But the thing they really are going to be protecting is the impact. And so that's good. They can have him on the field. They can have him doing some throwing. But I'm glad that he's got a little more time before he starts taking shots.
Take a hit.
Yeah.
All right. After a year with Dr. James Andrews at the Andrews Institute, thank you for joining us. You're now in Vegas. What do you like? Do you you love living in this beautiful area? It's great, right?
It's fantastic. Couldn't have no complaints. Very, very happy to be here.
Go see him online, CrivettiOrtho.com, Crivetti Orthopedic Center. Dr. Caleb Pittiger will be with us every other week here on Fridays. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, doctor.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right.
It's that time, you know.
When we come back.
$400.
On the line from Dollar Loan Center. It's the Weekend Bankroll on the Press Box.